the eyes are not. So, and that includes reputation source herds. Vaccination plans. Certainly, our goal is herd level immunity. We're made up of individuals, but how can we produce, give us some options?
Two hands.
We're not going to be able to treat open animals the same as we
are. I'm glad you're listening to notice this. We occasionally have to enthusiasm to get the kids out, but not always. Usually you can work with your hands and get it opened up enough to get the kids out.
Look at him. Relative disease resistance. I guess you can pick your. Pick our favorite disease here and just make it specific. But
yes,
a population of animals will have a relative level of disease resistance, and that's whether they say
good question. How do we get
exposure
good calves out of a
that are highly resistant?
How do we make a good calf out of a cow that's has a 45-50 pound calf at birth?
Might superimpose the disease challenge level. We might make this, if we purchase this group of
people, brought
them to a new ranch, and
yes,
there
is
a certain level of disease challenge present.
Yes, sir.
And so we made this example. Oh, there are some animals.
Well, we don't have much trouble with that. I don't know the answer to your question.
But there are
cows milk well. Now, we do plan on weaning those calves early. Our calves, all first calf heifers, are weaned at about 170 days. And so they're a very young calf when we wean them. But I'll tell you what, it's just no wives' tale. We never touch the udders on those cows.
On a herd basis.
Okay? If the calf doesn't take it, we don't touch it.
Animals are susceptible, and that will have.
If a cow has a good udder to begin with,
dynamics. Spread of disease.
We've never had trouble with too much kids going bad or others going bad because kids didn't take off.
Of herd vaccination and what we try to accomplish as we move new animals into a herd. So a little more on vaccination plans.
No,
open females.
Not on the head.
Certainly, we've got the option of using.
Well, we don't test those. We don't watch the cows' kids. So if they had twin
animals,
they either. They're either good enough to raise both of them by themselves, or we just see one calf.
Also, the bacterial agents, clostridial.
But on our heifers, we take an extra calf off.
Vibrio, et cetera.
Other questions?
Blend those animals into our herds.
Yes, ma'am.
Whereas we're restricted, as you know, somewhat with pregnant female replacements on incoming vaccinations. We're probably going to be limited mostly to killed virus vaccinations, with the exception. If we're able to obtain herd records of vaccination history, such that in some cases, if
I've got a real good secretary,
to receive a modified live as we blend these animals
yeah.
in.
Now, the only thing that we tag a calf with a cow is on our first calf cows, and we do that. And then we'll make a call on those heifers at the end of the year. There's some of those heifers that wean or not, but they don't stay with me. They may be bred, but they live.
Other risks, certainly a calf scour risk.
No.
Particular ranches may need some attention, too, because you have opportunity to increase immunity.
Well, we do ID all of our cows. All of our cows are ID, everything. But we do not go out with the mature herds and try to tie their calves to their mothers. Once she has made it through my program, once she has her second calf, she's pretty sound reproductive. And all I want her to do from that point forward is raise a calf.
We handle animals.
So I don't worry about that. But no, we do not do any
inbreeding. As I mentioned, though, and I think a major point for a purchase replacement is the issue of separating, holding these animals separate from the resident herd for a period of time. And if the industry, I believe, would adopt one management change that would reduce risk significantly.
No, that's not our reason. It's logistics. Because we're going to wean and precondition those calves, and it's just a matter of manpower. I have to start early, and I start with my heifers. So they get weaned pretty early, and then we progress through the mature cows.
Yeah.
It's more of a logistic deal than anything else.
Because we know that commingling around that period of time increases risk for calf diarrheas. We know that younger calves are at higher risk for infectious disease. if this pathogen or disease agent occurs in exchange.
Yes, sir. The question is about breeding low birth weight, keeping heifers out of heifers that are sired by low birth weight bulls, and then breeding those back to low birth weight bulls. And again, I will have to say this. I don't go to extremes. Again, remember I said I try to keep a balance in
there.
I don't go to the lowest birth weight bull I can find. I try to be more aggressive each year in the breeding of those heifers, and that's the reason I use AI, because I can get some predictable bulls for you. And so I will crowd birth weight to get the other traits in there that I want. I don't necessarily pick the lowest birth weight bull every year.
Reduced risk.
Yeah. But no, I don't see a problem with that. Sure don't. And haven't yet.
You not introduced PI, DVD animals.
I think I'm probably out of time. We better move on. Thank you.
Pregnant ones, or if there are pregnant, prior to commingling or introduction of PIs can occur. Thanks very much, Tom. I think that we'll see. There may be time for some more play, but we know that I think they're probably in a herd population. Will about most of the
anyway, I'd like to hopefully this what I'd like to follow up Tom will complement some of his thinking more specifically related to the very much the health area.
Number
I think he touched on the definition of health a whole lot
this morning,
all the way through his discussion. I'm going to focus this down, though, into more specific infectious disease health considerations here. And I'm going to really be talking about some concepts, if you will, starting out with some economics.
This is going to be very
information.
Your strategies are
going to get into biosecurity and biocontainment
concepts
in a little while. And then hopefully we can find
a little bit of that to
increase whether these heifers are home raised or whether they're purchased.
Now, I think some
much improved our Hardiobovis lepto diagnostics.
First thing I did, though, was I felt like I had to find a reference somewhere for
someone
who's serologist
extensively on
replacement heifers
and had a good process
of being improved.
Good yoni perspective of
where we might be going in the future.
This would be testing older cattle, really.
As we consider where the industry is headed over the next few years, certainly this issue of replacement diagnostics,
I think, very much on the table.
Certainly, Califac is reporting that for
years,
the U.S. herd is rebuilding, increase in cow numbers,
so
as well as
better
as we starting
raise the bar.
Year,
certainly,
I think we've always had growth somewhere in the country.
Other considerations
right now,
biosecurity, biocontainment,
are in some widespread
great time for equipment
restocking,
beginning
part of the country.
So,
how that's going to require a number of producers in order to restock,
and I think we all operate
in this place,
range that
we're tracking maybe
one might not be practical for others
in the next
years.
So
we're going to probably have more retention
than we are as well as movement and replacement.
We have a more specific
certainly cannot underscore the importance of the things
Tom
mentioned to you.
People
regard to replacement
cattle flow
as we consider it's a narrow area of infectious disease right now.
Certainly
very, very key.
This is very much
integrally
tied
to all other parts of replacement through our disease development.
If that cap is too big,
summarizing
difficult time briefly
and certainly
doesn't absorb adequate colostrum.
Being able to integrate
better health
into our herds
will begin to cascade.
Not only this
first year of calving,
issues
in
the herd
into our herd
and getting these animals off the
land
for many years,
utter
lifetime,
very important,
has a profound
economic
effect.
Good uttered animals,
I think the
high level of colostrum,
we consider health risks,
other health plans,
disease control plans,
designs,
a lot of things
become more important as we're moving forward.
So using
as we consider, though,
risk,
I think,
is concept
an important word.
It works very well.
Infectious diseases,
we've got to
differentiate how we handle.
We kind of go the gamut,
purchase replacement,
catastrophic
illnesses,
high levels of infertility,
et cetera,
health risks,
even
very much chronic,
very much
subclinical,
hard to measure kind of
disease.
So we're in a mode where we need to
make make decisions that will manage that risk in a profitable manner. So we, I think as we move forward,
I think so. With
consideration of the options that we have,
are we satisfied with the
levels we're at now?
Do
we want to improve as an industry or as individual producers?
It might become very important.
Getting to questions
for time factors and trying to tie these to infectious disease,
I think
the consideration for percent half crop wean
as well as pounds wean per cow exposed are still number one production factors related to profitability. And of course, as we consider health issues and interventions that might improve those two parameters, certainly cost of production becomes important as well. Reproductive traits, just a little bit more narrowly, percent calf crop and calving distribution are high on our list as we are developing replacement heifers and trying to formulate health plans that can best address these traits. As we consider just some numbers here and related to percent calf crop wean, but more narrowly here, this is just perinatal mortality, calf death loss right around calving time. So you could lump late-term abortions, weak calves, some early calf scours, or death-gone calves, etc., into this data set. And this is actually from here, from A&M a number of years ago. This is a SPA, results of a SPA data set of Bob Coombs. But he looked at, they calculated, looked at mortality rates and increasing death loss around calving time and its effect on return on assets. And as you can see, each percentage rate increase of death loss around calving time has about a quarter of a percent effect on return on assets. And certainly when we're in these years of very low return on asset margins, calf loss can be a very major effect, have a very major effect on productivity. You've seen calving distribution charts before. Certainly, numbers of heifers or animals calving early in the calving season have a great effect. And Tom described his program, I think 700 heifers that are AI'd within 5 days, and you can imagine where those are going to calve. And I'm going to show you some other data in just a minute. And certainly, we might contrast the calving distribution here on the left with one over here on the left, on the right, where we might be interjecting reproductive disease, such as trichomoniasis, such as DVD, possibly IBR, that could cause a result in calving distributions. This is a data set from North Dakota State, the Dickinson Center, Chris Ringwald there, and they looked at the average calf weaning weights, and you probably have these records in your own herd, but they wanted, it's a data set that shows average calf weaning weight by 21-day calving period, and there's, I believe, 267 head of animals in this data set, and as you can see on the right, the first 21 days of calving season, and moving on to the second and third, there was a 40-pound and an 88-pound decrease in weaning weight based on when those heifers calved during the those cows calved during the calving season. I took this a little further and just calculated out the gross economic return by calving period, and I used some numbers from the Superior Video Option data set. Mike King calculated the dollars, the price per hundredweight return in that particular data set, and Glenn Rogers showed some of those numbers a little bit earlier. There were over 400,000 head of cattle in that data set this last fall. And if the animals weighed in the range of 556 weight, they returned $1.17, and then if they're a little lighter, it went to $1.22 and $1.29. So with that 40 and 88-pound difference in weaning weight, the gross returns per head were about $21 difference and about $25 difference based on weaning weight and prices received. So even though these younger calves, and we all say, well, look at, yes, those younger calves will bring more per pound when they go to the market, and yes, they did in this data set, but they didn't bring enough more, and certainly the earlier calves brought more dollars. And just looking at the number out here, out of that data set, 267, if we just use the superior prices last fall, $170,000. I just changed then the calving distribution somewhat. Recall we were in the 50s over in the previous slide. We dropped that to 30, 40, and 30, for example. So we've got a poorer calving distribution, not as many animal calving up early, and so I am using the same prices per hundredweight, the same dollars per head then. What did that return look like? And in this data set, $168,000, just doing the math, it's almost a $3,000 loss, and that's not a terribly marked difference in calving distribution, over almost $11 a head difference. Based on that number over the entire herd. So very much difference in economic returns. Glenn Rogers showed these slides in the first session. I'll go over them for those of you who are maybe new to the session for this portion of it. L5 herds in Texas a few years ago, and he looked at lifetime average calf weights per female as affected by date of calving during as a two-year-old. And certainly, this average lifetime weaning weight was greatest for those heifers that calve early in the calving season that first year. So as we consider heifer development, infectious disease risk, and protection, certainly that target becomes very evident. He also, L.R. Sprott, and also considered the average lifetime cost to produce a pound of calf. You can see the trends there very clearly, just based on where that heifer calves the first time during that calving season. As we consider then options for disease control, I think traditionally we're kind of down in this range. We've considered vaccinations, and of which use can be much better, which means that a number of producers are doing very little in that regard to disease control. But we're going to define in a little bit here some options that we have in regard to biosecurity, biocontainment that might help to reduce risk or control risk in the industry. First, trying to define these two terms, and I'm certainly not trying to belabor the point of two words that we don't always have in our vocabularies, but simply what are we talking about here, I think, is the main thing. As the words biosecurity, biocontainment are really associated with reduced risk for disease or control or elimination. Biosecurity really simply means, you know, what are we doing to prevent disease entry into a herd, while biocontainment is what are we doing to control it. So I'll use those words maybe interchangeably a little bit. As we look at fundamentals, vaccination certainly is in the arena of increasing immunity. The other two fundamentals of biosecurity, biocontainment are also prevent transmission and eliminate the agent. So we might try, we'll see how we can apply some of these to replacements here very shortly. As we consider immunity, these heifers that we're replacing, whether we raise and purchase, certainly we're depending on vaccination or field exposure to infectious agents for actively acquired immunity. And of course, co-optum is related to passive immunity. And as you've heard, it certainly has lifetime effects on productivity of an animal. Elimination of the disease agent. I think you heard an excellent presentation this morning from Dr. Tom Hargrove on a disease control plan for leptohargobovis that involved both treatment and vaccination. Vaccination with Spirovac, treatment with LA-200. But there are also, and I think you're I think some of you are maybe more aware or more free, in touch with some of these than you maybe wanted to be. But we've, historically, we've dealt with brucellosis and tuberculosis. But as we move forward with biosecurity, biocontainment, we're moving into voluntary yonis control programs. There are also BVD control plans that are developed that we can consider starting to, apply in our herds to reduce risk from that disease. And I think you can, you can visit with your veterinarian for other disease risks that you may want to address, that you may want to eliminate in herds, such as bovine leukemia and a couple of others. And a BVD control or eradication plan might look something like this, but it's basically a plan that that will delineate steps how you might want to achieve your goals in your herd as you move forward with something like BVD control or eradication. And as we look at this area of this fundamental of preventing transmission, as you know, we've got numerous infectious agents, of which some are very, very common. There's probably not a herd represented in here that doesn't have a rotavirus, for example, that potentially can cause calf diarrhea in it. Cryptosporidium is very, very common. But on the other hand, there are other agents that are very relatively rare, if you will, such as probably trichomoniasis. Or maybe anthrax or some others that can be very severe, but they tend to be less frequent. And so we've got to, as we design control plans, consider the prevalence, or relative prevalence or risk of, some of these particular agents. And so we have options within herds to reduce exposure. We can design systems for calf diarrheas, for example, to reduce exposure through systems such as age segregation of calves, scheduled moves of, animals to low exposure environments. We can also design plans to eliminate the agents within herds, such as BVD or, yonis. And for new animals, certainly, as we're commingling, introducing infectious agents, we can manage to reduce exposure, and we may choose to do testing to verify disease-free status of, animals that we're introducing. Transmission, just an example, I guess, right here, is that we now know that for BVD virus, for example, the most common transmission is by virtue of introducing PI animals into herds, and that's going to be animals that I might purchase and bring home, or I guess across the fence as well. But these PI animals are certainly the major source of virus within our population of cattle in North America. And so this is just a brief example here. If I'm purchasing replacement heifers from a herd that's got a prevalence of 2% PIs, now what are my chances of bringing home a PI and introducing into my herd? And if you do the math, the risk of purchasing a PI in a group of 20 head of heifers becomes 33%. So I've got a pretty good chance of bringing one of those girls home that's a PI, and thereby transmit BVD virus into my herd. So I guess how do I want to handle that risk? Glenn showed this slide earlier this morning. This is a 10-year profitability model that Bob Larson and Vern Pierce at the University of Missouri published. But in a nutshell, it's kind of like, what's this worth potentially? It's possibly PI animals are in this model where it costs about $20 per head return on fixed assets for beef cows. So there's a number that I've shown this slide elsewhere, and someone in the front row shook their finger at me and said, these estimates are way too low. And certainly we get into catastrophic kinds of losses where they do get considerably higher than that particular number. So let's kind of try to differentiate here from home-raised and purchased animals assuming that if we purchase animals, they're going to be commingled with the resident herd, and see where a little bit of these biosecurity and biocontainment applications might go. And certainly, spend a little bit of time here in home raised replacement. Certainly, the development programs and the heifer development management strategies, as Tom outlined, are just absolutely essential. And as he said, if one of these legs fails, we're not going to be very successful without excellent planning. And I think it's no different, certainly, with higher levels of DVD or higher levels of the disease control plans in our operations. And I think some of the options that we have, and I think these are things that you'll need to work out with your veterinarian over some time. Certainly, DVD control plans can eliminate exposure. I can prevent transmitting DVD into my herd by testing replacements, by testing offspring of replacement heifers. I can design plan for calf diarrhea to reduce exposure transmission within the herd that will reduce my risk for calf diarrhea. Within herds, if I need to know if my herd is infected with DVD, so I can attack and I exercise my option of making decisions. Also, Hartzell Bovis, Dr. Hargrove outlined that those options that are now available for better control via a control plan, in my opinion, that goes farther than just vaccination, but he's addressing disease in a comprehensive manner that certainly reduces risk even further. And we can go down the list there. Parasite control also a very, very important key. Discussion points related to vaccinations, virals on replacement heifers. I think Dr. Rogers also mentioned earlier this morning, pre-breeding vaccinations are an important key, following the label and giving the appropriate boosters. Certainly, as we consider replacement animals, they really need to get at least 2 modified live vaccinations prior to breeding. Is this a booster situation? Not entirely. As we're vaccinating animals that get around weaning or post-weaning, we don't get a response like we'd like to. In the highly controlled lab environment, most every animal responds to vaccination. But in the real world, that's not quite the case. And we can make a long list of reasons why that doesn't happen. But certainly, revaccinating these animals will increase the numbers of animals that respond and are immune at the time that we want them to be immune. I'd make another comment on DVD as well. You know, our target really for DVD vaccinations in the cow herd in replacement heifers is easily preventing the PI calf. Fetal protection is the highest priority. Yes, we want to prevent abortions and other reproductive effects of DVD virus, but number one is preventing that growth of that PI animal as well as we possibly can. And so you certainly want to make allowances for that when you're choosing your vaccination program and targeting that. Bacterial vaccinations, you want to consider the Clostridials, Campylobacter vibrio, Lepto, including Hartzell Bovis, as well as, and depending what your program is, Mannheimia, Pastorella, especially heifers that you might be going to a lot with, et cetera, that to reduce risk effects of BRD. So just a few comments in that regard. Moving into purchase replacements, we certainly have, obviously have had less control over those animals, and we know much less about their health risk than animals that are home raised. So as we start gathering history, we'd like to know as much as we can about them, and we'll just touch on each of these very briefly here in the next couple slides. But I think what we have to acknowledge is that when we're commingling cattle from more than one source, it results in exchange of infectious agents. And that's a given. And in much of the industry, commingling is a fair necessity, even though it does pose risks. So some of the things we try to do are how do we manage those risks in the most beneficial economic manner. And so, what options do we have in handling those particular risks? And I'd suggest that as we move forward, that disease control plans are going to become more important in handling that risk, that become more comprehensive. This is a schematic that really describes variability. And we could make this almost any parameter we wanted to measure. It says that within our biologic world, we've got variability. And as we're introducing animals here, possibly as an example, into a herd to become one, we've got all kinds of subpopulations in there, and that could be related to immunity. It'll be related to size, to breed, etc. But certainly, this variability that we're introducing into our populations when we bring home animals from other sources does pose some real challenges to us. And how do we deal with that as they become part of an overall population? So, I guess where do we go with some of this? Certainly, when we've got the options, purchasing cattle with as much health history as possible is going to carry us a long ways. Vaccination records, so they can be incorporated into our herd in the best possible manner. Also, diagnostic and treatment records to know what risks there are in that particular herd and how you might handle those animals going forward is of critical importance. Is this previous source, what kind of disease control plan are they on? Are they part of a Yoni's? Are they involved with Yoni's control in that particular herd, BVD, etc., that might be important to you? Mark might highlight Yoni's just a little bit. As we purchase replacement heifers, particularly these yearling kinds of animals, diagnostic tests are basically unreliable for young animals. And so the history of a herd becomes of key importance, because I can't really test these yearling cattle I'm considering purchasing to give me an answer as to what my Yoni risk might be. The blood tests in particular are not reliable at that particular age for several reasons. So I also might want to know other health-related information, implants, et cetera, that might influence how I might handle these animals. And I think in the industry we give a lot of credibility to reputation source cattle. And certainly, these animals have a lot of advantages that relate to health specifically and with reduced risk. But I think we also need to remember these animals, these critters, are not disease-free either. And so it behooves us to scrutinize even those kinds of cattle for certain kinds of health entities. Using BVD as an example, we know that there are certain percentages that there are